This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. I am Connor Dunning, filling in for the big man, Gabe Kuhn, until he is back. Now I'm joined by Jeff Calkins, columnist at the Daily Memphian and host of the Jeff Calkins Show on 929 FM ESPN every single weekday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. Jeff, I've been starting every interview with this question. Do you have any advice for soon-to-be father Gabe Kuhn?
Yeah, if you can play UConn as soon as you can, because they stink. So the baby should line up a date with UConn as soon as possible, because everyone, it appears, is beating UConn. No, okay, we'll get to UConn. We'll get to UConn in a minute. No, I don't have any advice. Most of the advice is cliche. Honestly, here's the truth. The biggest advice that I would have in this day and time for a new parent is keep them off screens for as long as you possibly can. Do not capitulate. Do not have your kid, babysit at age 6 months with a screen, or 2 years, or 5 years. Well, my sister has twins, and they're now young 20s, but I was astounded. She had them on a flip phone, splitting one flip phone through the end of high school. Now, that was not, they're in their young 20s. So now it would be even harder. And the pressure, I can only imagine. Like, my kids are also in young 20s. And I wasn't perfect in this regard myself, You sort of capitulate. But I do think the easiest thing to do that would have the biggest impact on your kid is to try to limit screens as much as possible, because they are rewiring people's brains, my brain, your brain, everybody's brains, in ways that I don't think we know even yet. And for kids' brains that are just being formed, that's my advice. That's my advice. Whether I was able to adhere to it, even in my own era of child raising, is a serious question, but that would be my advice.
I think that's great advice, because I don't know if you know that this trend is going on, but I didn't have a cell phone until I was 13. I think that I got the best of both worlds, because I had the pre-internet age and then the post-internet age, and I am very, very happy that I didn't have to come up in high school and college and have Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and all that stuff, because the pressures that these kids see now are wild. And there's a new trend with people around my age that are having kids, where they are showing them TV shows from when we were kids. So like Bear in the Big Blue House, all this stuff, because they're not as stimulating as these new shows, which is just color, 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 noise, noise, noise.
Well, I also understand there's TikToks of people watching these shows of high school or whatever, in the shows that showed what high school was like in the 90s or 2000s, and people were actually sitting there looking at each other, having conversations without a phone in their hand, right? I mean, so I think the dangers of the technology are immense in all kinds of ways. One is the social pressures you feel when you're a teenager. But I think the other is literally when they're three, they'll have a screen, and they're being wired to just react to the stimulus of a screen, which is, let's be honest, calculated. It is created to be more compelling than real life, right? And so, in the same way that sugar cereals or sugar, the food that we eat, is processed to be irresistible and addictive, so too are things on our phones. And so I just can't believe that's a good thing for a three-year-old or five-year-old brain. And then, yes, then you get into teenagerhood, and you see all the social pressures and the feeling of, of inferiority or whatever else, comparison, everything else that is endemic because of that. I really do. I think it's I mean, once you get to that stage, I know there are high schools now, and I read a recent piece in the Daily Memphian about it, that insist that people, you know, that one of the rules is you give up your phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you walk in and you put your phone in one of those magnetic envelopes things, and then you get it back at the end of the day. And I would like my school kid, if I was to do it again, to go to a school that did not let kids have phones during the day. I can't imagine how it's possible to concentrate. I have a hard time concentrating myself. You know, I'm always reaching for my phone. Now, the challenge is, of course, is that it's all available on the laptop too, and everyone's teaching on a laptop. But anyway, I think all that sound advice. Best of luck to Gabe, but also schedule UConn, because anyone can beat UConn these days, apparently.
Yeah, that's where I was going next. So this morning on your show, you asked the question, was UConn the biggest win of Penny Hardaway's career? And at the time, number two UConn had been upset by Memphis. Huge, huge game. But as we get to 5 o'clock and Memphis has just tipped off against Michigan State, they're currently up 5-0. UConn fell to Colorado right before I had you on. Is UConn still Penny Hardaway's biggest win, even though UConn dropped a game the next day?
Well, and I heard you talking about this earlier in the show. That was not the one I voted for anyway. Now, Penny gets to pick what his biggest game is. I don't see how you can compare a regular season win to a tournament win. Like, you beat number two UConn. Okay, fine. You beat number one Houston for a conference championship. Mm-hmm. I thought this was clearly bigger. If this is a massive game, because of the context of it, because of the turmoil of the summer, because it's seventh year, because the way it unfolded, I thought it was the most thrilling, unexpected, emotionally satisfying win of Penny's career, as if just watching it. But I don't, like, if Penny had been all this time without a single NCAA tournament win, I think there's a certain recency bias. I think that win to lift you into a game against Gonzaga on that, you know, I think if you hadn't won that game, that's a pretty big mark on your resume. And so I would have put that one probably first, or maybe the Houston one, and then this one third, even though acknowledging it's massive, and I think more emotionally satisfying than anyone they've had, just because of what everyone went through watching it yesterday. But there's no question, of course, it's diminished by the fact that Colorado went out the next day and did the same thing. I mean, it's a little bit like beating Florida State this year in football.
I know.
It's not the same. It's not the same. Well, first of all, Florida State at that point had already been exposed a little bit, mm-hmm. right? We already kind of were wondering about Florida State. We didn't know how much they stunk, but we knew they stunk. Yeah, I think if you voted in our poll for the UConn game, I think now that they've also lost to Colorado, I think you might want to revote. Again, it's still a massive win. It's still a massive win. No question about it. But that's the problem with these early season games is you don't know the context. We don't know how good UConn is. UConn had played nobody. Now, I suspect that will still look like a very good win, come Selection Sunday, is my suspicion. I mean, Danny Hurley may be a jackass in many ways, but he is, I still think, a good coach. Although it's interesting, the data point that's floating around about his record in close games is pretty amazing. It's not impressive, honestly. If he doesn't blow you out, he tends to lose. So I still think it'll look like a very good win. I think it was as much fun, like the fun that people had yesterday and this morning celebrating it. I think it's totally legitimate. But you gotta. I mean, I was rooting for UConn to beat Colorado just because you don't want the win to any of the luster to come off of it right away, right? Of course not.
Right. I think one of the reasons yesterday's win felt so special, at least to me, was it had the classic making of a Memphis meltdown at the end of a game.
Oh, 100%.
You know, they let them rally back. They hit a massive three. You didn't foul when you were up three. That, you know, that haunts every single Memphis Tigers fan for the rest of time. We're never going to forget that game. And then miraculously, without P.J. Haggerty, without Nicholas Jourdain, and even when they were down in overtime, I think there was like a minute 30 left, and they were still down, they somehow won the game. And I think that just being a lifelong Memphis fan, that's a game that they stereotypically lose every single time.
Oh, It's why I thought it was the most emotionally satisfying win, for all those reasons. The emotional roller coaster that folks had been on. I don't know if you've lived here for any length of time. Certainly, if you were here in 2008, there was no way that you didn't feel "here we go again." Like, it had all the echoes, and it's why I felt that was the most emotionally satisfying win of his tenure, pretty easily. Right? Like, it was an incredible sort of catharsis when they ended up winning. It was like everything in that game. And all of the echoes of 2008. I just mean, biggest is a different question.
Right.
Right. Biggest and most emotionally satisfying to me are different questions. And biggest, I'll still put a tournament win up over any win in November, for the reasons that we saw, because they just came out and UConn just came out and lost to Colorado. But we're picking nits here, because they're all fabulous wins. Like, to me, they're unquestionably bigger than when they went to Knoxville and beat Tennessee at Knoxville. It's unquestionably bigger than Alabama. Like, it was a seismic, wonderfully fun, cathartic win for them to win it in the way they did. And that's why I said it's the circumstances of the win. Penny's seventh season, the time he's being doubted, all of that. And then the circumstances under which it played out, with, as you said, the collapse at the end, the not fouling, the three-point shot going through, your best player on the bench, falling behind in overtime and still coming back. So it was a massive win. And listen, I do think it makes it – the fact that UConn lost makes it a little – Ron Olson said to me this morning, he said, "I don't even care what happens today against Michigan State." Well, now that, now that there's a little luster off of this one, let's go stack another.
Right.
against Michigan State.
Yeah, and right now it is 11-10 with 14-13 left to go in that game. You spoke about him just a moment there, but I do think that part of the satisfaction of yesterday's win was watching Dan Hurley kind of melt down on the sidelines and then in the presser. What'd you make of that?
Well, I mean, it was crazy. He is so relentlessly abusive, and has been. I remember the first time I covered a game at in Memphis where he coached, and you can't quite believe it, that he can be as profane, as disrespectful, as relentlessly so throughout the entire game, losing his mind, and saying hideous things to officials. And it's the Draymond Green phenomenon, is that if you act like a complete jackass all the time, they can't call you all the time, right? Like, you weirdly enough, get the benefit of the doubt. Oh, well, this is just Draymond being Draymond. This is just Danny Hurley being Danny Hurley. But it was, I mean, you could read lips pretty easily.
Oh, yeah.
An effing joke. Well, I'd tee him up, and then he throws himself to the ground on top of it. And so I found it sweet sweet justice that he cost his team that game. And whatever you thought about the over-the-back foul, and I could see it either way. I can see the argument. I can see why he'd be irritated. I think if that call had gone against Memphis in that circumstance, Memphis fans would have been irritated, and Penny Hardaway would have been irritated. But Penny Hardaway would have not gone up to the official and said, "You're an effing joke," and then thrown himself onto the ground. Like, it's Penny has a little more grace than that. And so I found it delightful. Now, the only problem, of course, is it took some of the focus off of Memphis's win and put it on Hurley. But whatever, I found that to be part of the fun of yesterday, absolutely.
Yeah, speaking of fun, I found myself last night watching the Grizzlies just absolutely dismantle a horrific Blazers team. But I was thinking to myself, it is fun to watch basketball again in Memphis. You have a big Tigers win today. The Grizzlies aren't decimated by injuries. It feels like the city's starting to get that electricity back for basketball, and it's a good time. Now, before I let you go, the Jeff Calkins segment at 5 p.m. It's famous for many reasons here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, but one of them is people always enjoy your food takes. So with Thanksgiving coming up, I have got to ask you, What is the best or your favorite Thanksgiving side?
I think stuffing is the best. Don't you stuffing dressing? Do you call it? Are they interchangeable in your world?
I've always called it stuffing.
Yeah, I grew up calling it stuffing, and then I guess whatever down here. I don't know, but you know, it's so funny. I said this on my show. It's amazing that people of my era are alive, because not only did we have lawn darts, and not only did we not wear seatbelts, and not only did, you know, your mother would, you'd stand on the front seat as you're driving, your mom, when you get to a stop sign, she just put out her hand to sort of, so you didn't topple off the seat as you're standing on the front seat. Not only did she smoke, my mom, the doctor, smoke and drink all the time, including in the car while we're careening along. Like the way my mom would defrost a turkey was to just leave it out. You know, really, she sort of left it in the back room, which was sort of half, you know, we had coats and boots and stuff. She put it in a big pan in the back room for a couple of days to thaw. And then she'd actually stuff the stuffing, which I guess you're not supposed to do now, into the turkey, and it would cook in there, simmering all the germs or whatever it does, all the botulism cooking away in there. And then we'd eat it, and we'd be happy. And it was great. And so I don't know how we lived through it. And then at Christmas came along, we'd have eggnog made with real raw eggs, you know, real raw eggs in the eggnog. So I don't know how we survived. But I don't know. Isn't it? Don't you think pretty clearly, if you put up a poll, that stuffing would win?
I think it would win. It's not necessarily my favorite Thanksgiving side.
What are you
side.
Going with?
Honestly,
I mean, mashed potatoes and gravy are great.
I'm a mashed potatoes guy, and so I'm gonna have to go there. I'd also go mac and cheese. My grandmother also makes this corn salad that's delicious. She makes it specially for me every single year. She basically gives me a giant bucket of it. So I'm looking forward to that.
Let me ask you this: is mac and cheese a Thanksgiving side? In other words, it's delicious and it can be a certain, but is it as much? Is it fair to include it in the list of sides? Like stuffing you only eat at Thanksgiving, you know, some kind of a freaking broccoli salad or some broccoli casserole. You're only eating sweet potato casserole. You're only like those are associated with Thanksgiving. I'll eat mac and cheese any day of the week. Right. So is it fair to include mac and cheese in the list of sides?
I'm going to give you a bit of a cop out answer. I think in the South it is. I think in the South, because it's such a staple, and I have been at Thanksgiving gatherings where someone didn't bring mac and cheese, and it was like a war crime had happened. So
I have. Do you prefer a baked mac and cheese or
No.
I don't either.
I've never been a baked mac and cheese guy.
The baked, you know what it is? It dries out that way.
Yeah,
I want it to be swimming in cheese, like it, you know. But I don't pretend to be like, I'm not, someone called me practically a Memphian today. They wish you happy Thanksgiving and whatever else. They said, you're practically a Memphian. I'm like, God, I've been here 26 years. How long do I have to be here? But I'm very clearly not a Southerner. I may be a Memphian, but I'm not a Southerner. So I can't weigh in on these subjects of Southern expertise.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for spending time with me today. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
That was the great Jeff Calkins. You can hear him every weekday morning right here on 929 FM ESPN from 9 to 11 a.m. We'll be back here on the Gabe Kuhn Show with the Blix Nets. Stick around. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show right here on 929 FM ESPN. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe, who is about to be a new father. I got a couple updates for you before we jump into the Blitz. Number one. The Memphis Tigers currently lead Michigan State 19-17. And stop me if you heard this before. Tyrese Hunter is 2 of 3 from three. Having a great game. He has 6 points. Moussa Cisse has 4 points. He's the second leading scorer on the team. So it is 19-17 with 8:53 to go in the first half. Also got to update you. Got some bad news. I think the basketball gods heard me saying that it's been a lot of fun to watch Ja Morant and Memphis basketball recently, because we just got word that Morant will be out against the Detroit Pistons on Wednesday. Now, this seems to be precautionary. Ja said that he knocked knees with a defender and it was just a stinger, and he continued to play after the game and suggested it wasn't a big deal. So hopefully this is just a one-game thing. To be quite honest, they should be able to beat the Detroit Pistons without Ja Morant. However, I will say, Detroit Pistons, pretty good this year. Not bad. Might be able to sneak in to the Eastern Conference playoffs at one point. Last update for you. George, tell me if you've heard this before. Dan Hurley, sometimes you're not getting a great whistle, and I don't think out there we've gotten a great whistle. It just hasn't bounced our way out here that way. It killed us to have so many guys in foul trouble during the game. Was that quote from today or yesterday?
I'm going to guess today.
Correct. That quote was from today.
You could have convinced me.
Hey, Danny Hurley.
Either way.
Maybe your teams are just getting beat. Just a thought. Just a thought. Who knows? Just a thought. All right, let's jump into the Blitz. And as always, the Blitz is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. George, what you got for me?
Leading off, Aaron Rodgers disputed a report that said he wants to continue his NFL career in 2025 on a team other than the New York Jets. Appearing Tuesday on the Pat McAfee Show, as he always does, the veteran quarterback said he has yet to decide if he'll play next season. However, if he does, he'd like to play for the Jets.
Rodgers went on to say that he wants to base his decision on how his body feels and whether the Jets want him back. You want to be in a spot where you feel like you can win and you're valued, said Rodgers. And he is currently in one of the worst seasons of his career. As always, we know, the Jets are 3-8. They fired Robert Saleh. They have fired Joe Douglas. And they will have a new regime in 2025. Now, George, you've been chomping at the bit to talk about this. I know how much you dislike this man. I'm just going to let you off the leash here.
It isn't dislike, and it's funny that it actually comes up right as we're talking about this on SportsCenter to my left. It's not that I dislike Aaron Rodgers necessarily as a person or as a player. It just feels as though, in a way, he's holding this organization hostage, in a way. This is year two. It's only year two. One of those years it was spent, you know, him on the shelf. He's not playing, but we keep hearing from him. And now that he is playing, and it looks the way it does, and the season has gone the way it has, and the upper management has decided to clean house, goodbye head coach, goodbye general manager, and with that in mind, goodbye the interim coaches who, as a staff, I'm just going to say it, I expect, at the very least, the defensive coaches here and special teams coaches to go somewhere else and succeed. I do not want to see this man in a Jets uniform next season. And I think I speak for a lot of Jets fans when I say that. If we're going to go through this process of rebuilding the foundation of this team and of this franchise, it cannot be with a 41-year-old quarterback with health issues who has not shown you that he can play at a high enough level to elevate the good players around him. We're not talking about a team that is devoid of talent.
No, they got it. They got it.
They have a star running back in Breece Hall, multiple star receivers, the talent on defense, and we're getting a 3-8 season so far out of it.
I think what bothers me so much about Aaron Rodgers is he will completely deny things that he has said. He said that this report was 100% false and that he's not jumping off the ship. 2 weeks ago, they asked him, Aaron, you're going to play in 2025? Yeah, I think so. And then reports have been circulating about his unhappiness in New York. He doesn't want to be there. He wants to play. He still feels like his body can, but he doesn't want to be in New York. How do those rumors get created, Aaron, if they're not from you? We know that your camp's really small. You talk about it all the time. Don't trust a lot of people. Then you tell me how that story got out. You tell me how every story that comes out about you is somehow 100% false, had no truth in it, and then almost every single time,
it happens.
That story happens. Yeah. Almost every single time. The New York Jets sold their soul over to Aaron Rodgers 2 years ago, and it looked like it was going to be great. Hard knocks. Oh, everybody's back in Aaron Rodgers' side. He's a good guy. What a PR play. Hard knocks was for Aaron Rodgers. Ran out with the American flag. Ooh, we're super in. I want the Jets to be good. Why would I want the Jets to be good? I have no connection to them, but I'm rooting for the Jets all of a sudden. He goes down. And then we have to deal with him talking about, I'm going to come back from this Achilles injury as a 39, 40-year-old. I'm going to be able to come back faster than any human being has ever come back. I can do it because I am Aaron Rodgers. Nope, that story wasn't true. Then they're in the offseason. Oh, Jets are going to be back. Aaron Rodgers is happy. Team's going to be flowing. We got some superstars at the wide receivers. They are good enough. Aaron Rodgers feels like they're good enough. They got great weapons. They got Breece Hall. They're going to go win some football games. Nope, that didn't happen.
They've won a few.
Traded for Davante Adams. That hasn't worked out. Fired Robert Saleh. That hasn't worked out. You talk about the defensive coaches. Guess where their loyalty lies? Probably Robert Saleh. It's been an absolute dumpster fire in New York. And to be quite honest, this is what you get when you sign up for Aaron Rodgers. Go ask Packer fans. Go ask them. You don't want to talk about, you know, there's a story at the front page of ESPN right now about how similar his late career has been to a former Packer, Brett Favre. Stop playing games with franchises, Aaron. Stop protecting your guys. It's annoying as hell. How Nathaniel Hackett still has a job is mind-boggling to me. I think I could call a better football game at this point.
Probably.
He's not even calling football games at this point.
It's Todd Downing.
Why is he there?
Todd Downing is the offensive coordinator right now.
He is there is because he is friends with Aaron Rodgers, and we don't have to pretend otherwise.
Nope. It's disgusting. The amount of times now over the last handful of seasons, I have actively rooted against my favorite football team, my favorite NFL franchise. The amount of times I can't count the amount of games I've said, you know what? I really don't want the Jets to win this.
Did you see what he said about the last 2 years?
No.
Tell me if this is true.
Okay.
Roger said, these have been two of the most important years of my life and two of the best years of my life. True or false?
I'm going to go with false. He does have a Super Bowl ring, multiple MVPs, multiple seasons without torn Achilles. You know, I'm going to go with false on this one.
I'm going to go with false.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with false. Here's another thing. Tell me true or false. Rodgers said he felt bad about Douglas when he was fired last week. And he said, I just knew something might be going down here. And I was like, damn, I hope it's not Joe. True or false? Aaron Rodgers had no idea he was about to be fired.
False.
False.
He absolutely knew. And well, that's the thing.
But George, he's told us on Pat McAfee. Are you telling me that Aaron Rodgers has been going on Pat McAfee and lying to us? Is that the claim that you're saying?
I'm not going to.
Are you telling me that he had nothing to do with Robert Saleh? You're telling me he had nothing to do with Davante Adams?
So, with some of those, absolutely. We also have to remember, this is the Jets and Woody Johnson.
They're stupid.
Woody Johnson is another owner who likes to have his hands all in the inner workings of the football side of the organization. And I think that's a pretty good segue for our next segment, which we didn't get to talk much with Christian about this, and I'm sure he's glad for it. Speaking on 105.3 The Fan on Tuesday, again, as he always does, Cowboys owner and general manager Jerry Jones was asked whether it was crazy to think Mike McCarthy could receive a contract extension after the season. Quote, I don't think that's crazy at all. That's not crazy. Listen, Mike McCarthy is an outstanding coach. Mike McCarthy has been there, done that. He's got great ideas. So the bottom line is, in no place in my body language or anything else you have seen an indication about what we're going to be doing relative to this staff at the end of this year, and we shouldn't. We've got a lot of football left.
Absolutely insane.
It's
absolutely insane.
It's
Mike
ridiculous.
McCarthy should have been fired 2 years ago. What are we doing? Honestly, I feel bad for Cowboys fans. It's fun when the Cowboys lose, when they haven't been that good. At this point, I'm watching some of my friends be tortured, and I don't understand it. Jerry Jones, the only reason Mike McCarthy might keep his job is he doesn't push back. He's not going to tell Jerry Jones no. He's going to get his way every single time. There is no way Jerry Jones, at least it appears right now, would bring in somebody like Bill Belichick or Mike Vrabel, who wants to do things their way, or Ben Johnson. Go get a real football coach. Mike McCarthy, good coach, can't get it done with this team. But one of the reasons he can't get it done with this team is because you refuse to pay people. Their running back room, as you told me earlier off air, if this was 2016, we'd be like, oh, this is GM of the year. How did they get this many guys in the backfield? In the year of our Lord, 2024, probably the worst running back room in the NFL.
Probably.
Got zombie Zeke Elliott and Dalvin Cook on a leg.
It's been
bad. What are they doing? It makes absolutely
really
no sense to me why you're not going to fire him and go get a real football coach.
To me, it is very reminiscent of Jason Garrett.
Very.
In that he is just a puppet.
Yes, ma'am.
He is just a mouthpiece for what ownership is telling him to do. And the other half of this is the fact that Jerry Jones has the arrogance to also be the general manager of this team and not take any accountability for the issues that this team clearly has is appalling. It's nothing new. It's not surprising. It's just gross. That's my problem with it, is the fact that we kind of know that this is how they run things there, and we still are grossed out by it every time we just get reminded. And it seems like weekly, you know, he decides to go on this radio show that he has a weekly spot for.
Yeah, it turns out he hasn't fired them yet.
I was going to say,
even though he can't. But he hasn't.
He disrespects fans. He, you know, questions our intelligence. He questions other people's livelihoods. What else is he going to do as an owner before somebody, like, you know, locks him in a room and says, all right, you know, we're going to take it from here?
It's not going to happen.
No.
It's not going to happen. There's no way it happens. The Cowboys are always going to be held back by Jerry Jones's ego. Period.
Until he hands it to Stephen Jones, who...
Okay, Stephen Jones actually seems to want to put together a winning football team. I don't think he would be the train wreck that Jerry has been. Jerry, you were great in the early 90s when you first got the team. It wasn't really yours. You bought. What have you done since? 25 years. Nothing. You're the richest franchise in sports. Not football. Not American sports. In the world, you are number one. But you have guys in contract disputes. Why? Unserious business. And then he went on to say, this thing isn't over. He still thinks that this team could do something this year. What are we doing? I understand that the Cowboys, a few years ago, in 2018, rallied back from being 3-5 and made the playoffs. They had to win 7 of their last 8 games. Are they going to do that without Dak Prescott? Without all these guys? I'm not sure. We shall see. That's going to be it for the Blitz today, though. We will be back with Small Talk. Stay right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM, ESPN. All right, George. The Memphis Tigers are rolling right now. Right when we went to break, Tyrese Hunter had a dunk that made it a 6-0 Memphis run. He has Tiger fans on their feet, according to our good friend Parth Upadhyay. Michigan State is 2 of 11 in their last 11 field goal attempts and hasn't made a field goal in 251. Currently, the Tigers lead 32-25. Tyrese Hunter is leading the way with 11 points. He's 11 for 5 from 3. P.J. Haggerty is right behind him with 8 points, but he is 0 for from the field so far. I'm sorry, he's 0 for 2 from 3. He's 3 of 7 from the field. Hopefully we can get second half Haggerty in this game, but it's looking good for the Memphis Tigers so far. But that's pretty much going to do it for today's show. George, thanks for sitting in with me. We'll be back here same time, same place tomorrow. I want to thank my guest, Christian Fowler, Mike Keith, and Jeff Calkins. I will be back with Parker Fleming talking Grizzlies and David Cobb talking Maui Invitational and the chaotic college football playoffs. This has been Connor Dunning sitting in for Gabe Kuhn on the Gabe Kuhn Show. Peace.